Carl Stewart is an investment advisor representative of Carl Stewart Investment Advisor Incorporated. Call or text Carl now at 512-836-0590. Now, here's Carl.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. Thanks for listening. We're here this afternoon after the news at 4 until 5 into our 30th year here together. Amazing. And you determine what we're going to talk about this afternoon by calling or texting 512-836-0590. You may listen online right now at newsradioklbj.com or go there at your convenience and download previous broadcasts. Just go to the weekend host part of the website, and also this Thursday after the news at 6, we will rebroadcast today's show, and you can also go to the free app SoundCloud and download previous year's broadcasts as well. It's always a great idea, because I always say this because it's true, to call or text at the beginning of the broadcast. I take today's calls first, then today's texts, and then any other previous texts. And I want to start by thanking Kenny for helping me last week when we were in Taos, New Mexico, and he did a great job, as always, in helping me with Money Talk. 512-836-0590. If you're a regular listener, you know that every month I get an update on the residential real estate market in Austin, Texas. You may live elsewhere in the country, or you may live elsewhere in Texas or in the greater metropolitan area. These are Austin-specific numbers through March and compared to previous periods. So the median sales price was $442,577. That's an increase of 1% year over year. The median price per square foot, another way to think about that, was $224 per square foot. That's down 1% on a year-over-year basis. The total number of homes sold was 2,161, and that was up 1% year-over-year. There's a few more that I have, but I do have an incoming call. Joe, you're on the air. How may I help? John, you're on the air. How may I help?
Hey, how are you, Carl?
Good, thank you.
I have a question. So, me and my wife have been trying to buy our second home.
Yes.
And we undecided. We're trying to see the best way to go.
Yes.
So I got about, maybe $600,000 cash. And we were interested in buying a retirement home, like a beach house rent, so we can MRB.
Yes.
Airbnb. And so, but we're also trying to buy pay for it. And I wanted to get your opinion if you think would be the best way to go.
So I want to make sure, because we have a bad telephone connection. I want to tell you what you told me to make sure I understood. You and your wife are thinking about buying a vacation home, and you have $600,000 in cash now.
Yes.
And the question is, should you pay cash for it or should you get a mortgage? Is that your question?
Right. I mean, we know that the rates are kind of high.
Yeah.
And the house that we looked at, it was probably a little bit more than what we have cash.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that we kind of undecided. My wife was like, let's just get a loan.
Yes. Well, it certainly looks like
a house.
Yes. Yes. Well, of course, I like the idea of everyone ultimately not having any debt, whether that's auto debt, mortgage debt, or credit card debt. And you're also right that interest rates are much higher than they were a couple of years ago. It doesn't appear today like interest rates will be sharply lower later this year. Now, that's kind of a change from what you'd asked me in January, because most economists thought that these high interest rates would not only cause a slowdown in the real estate market, which has occurred, but they also thought that it would result in a weakening economy and even a recession. And that has not occurred. The job market is quite strong. Just this week, the report was that 303,000 more jobs were created. And the reason this matters to you and your wife is that if the economy is good, which it is currently, and the job market strong, which it most certainly is with unemployment only at 3.8%, the Federal Reserve has no big rush to lower interest rates. The idea was what the economy is going to get weak and then we'll lower rates, which would be good for you and your wife because your mortgage would be less. However, that's not the case. So so that makes it, that makes getting a mortgage is likely going to stay expensive. The second thing is, and I'm not a mortgage person, but if this is your second home, I don't know that the mortgage rate on a second home will be the same as on your personal residence. My experience is that because it's not your primary residence, that rate might even be higher. So I think
exactly right, because that's what they told us, that the rate going to be higher on the vacation home.
Yeah, so, So there you have it.
You get your primary home first, and then the rate be a lot lower. And then you can purchase your vacation home.
Do you have a current mortgage on your personal residence now?
I do, but I'll be interested in kind of looking one if you recommend one or if you have one.
Well, the thing is, if you have a lot of equity in your home, what you could do is you could use the cash that you have, and then you could borrow on a floating rate basis against the equity in your home. Rather than getting a mortgage right now for your vacation home, and then a year from now or 18 months from now, if mortgage rates have fallen, you could get a mortgage on that second home, and then take that money out and pay off the loan against your own house. That would be I'm not in that business, so that's just what my common sense tells me you could do, but I think. If you really want this, or you've found the home that you really want, and you've got that kind of cash, then I'd go ahead and either borrow the money at the current high rate in a traditional mortgage, or talk to your current mortgage people about borrowing against the equity in your home, because it certainly today doesn't look like we're going to see sharply lower mortgage rates over the next few months and possibly over the next year or so. I mean, we could have lower rates, but maybe mortgages for primary residences go from 7% to 6.5%. I mean, that's important, but it's not going to be a big deal for you. So that's how I would think about it if I were in your shoes.
Okay, perfect. You know, as far as the cash, I mean, there's a lot of people that approach me from Fisher Investments about, you know, a portfolio for the cash. But I'm not sure if that would be the way to go to be able to put the money to work.
Well, of course, if you put the money to let's argue this both ways. If you put the money to work, then you've got to borrow more money to buy the vacation home. So your interest expense in the vacation home, you'll know what that is. So what you have to think about is, if I put that money with Fisher Investments or somebody else, is that likely that my rate of return, my investment return, will exceed the amount of interest or the interest rate I'm paying? Because if you've got to borrow money, I'm just making this up, if you've got to borrow money at 8 or 8.5%, then I don't think putting the money, if that's your choice, then I don't think putting the money in the stock market is going to get you an annualized 8.5% return from current levels. And I hope I'm wrong, and we've had a good year so far, and last year was a terrific year. But I'd think long and hard about taking the money, putting it with anybody, and then getting a higher price mortgage. You know, back in the day when you could get a mortgage for 3%, then it made a lot of sense to invest in equities because you had a reasonable expectation that you'd make 6 to 8%. But I think the interest costs are so high for a second home, I'm not sure it's a good idea to invest it elsewhere.
Gotcha. I really appreciate all your help.
Okay, good luck. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. I'm Carl Stewart. It's time for me to take a break. A great time for you to call or text 512-836-0590. I'll be back.
You're listening to Money Talk with Carl Stewart on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM. Enjoy the podcast on newsradiokLBJ.com. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome back to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. Thanks for listening. We're here until 5. When you have a question, call or text 512-836-0590. Here's the text. Hey, Carl, I enjoy the show. Great. Last week, you were telling a skeptical listener how the economy is not that bad. I need some layman's explanation of why higher groceries, gas, rent, mortgages, entertainment, goods. What's making it good? The stock market, investments, or what exactly? I must need new glasses. Thank you for your help and understanding. Yeah, so it's a, first of all, you're in the, I think from what I've read, you're in the mainstream with most Americans who are frankly in a sour mood about the economy. What I was talking about really has to do from where we were with 9% consumer price index to where we are now with between 3 and 4%. There's no question that prices are higher. One of the things that's going on here is that a lot of economists point out the way we think about inflation is how it affects our pocketbooks on a daily basis. And you've alluded to that. There was a great piece in Friday's Wall Street Journal that I happen to keep, so I'm glad I've got it here in my hand, and it says what $100 bought in the grocery store in 2019 is now $136.89. So that's a lot more. Grocery prices were up 1% from in February from a year earlier. Labor Department data show that they were up 10% in February 23 versus a year earlier, and we're up 1% in February 29. So what we had is a real increase in grocery prices. That has leveled out, but there's something, I'm trying to think of the term, I think it's anchoring, where we think about things from some significant past experience. So if you were buying groceries 4 years ago, or 5 years ago in 2019, and you're buying them today, that's a big difference. And I understand that. I'm just talking about the rate of inflation has diminished significantly. Not that prices have gone back to where they were 5 years ago. Rarely, my understanding of American economic history, do prices fall for any length of time unless we're in a depression. Now, there, if you dig through this, what you see, for example, I mentioned earlier in Austin, residential real estate's up 1% year over year. Now, had a huge year earlier, but the current rate of inflation. So it's a lot about how it looks depends on where you're standing. And the other thing you mentioned, which is really important, is, yeah, mortgage rates are up, but the number of homes on the market, I'm talking about existing homes, what we call used homes, has collapsed. Why is that? Because if you have a 4% mortgage, unless you're forced to move, you've got a job and you've got to move to Chicago or Los Angeles, why would you voluntarily go out and buy a house with a 7% mortgage? The answer is you wouldn't. So mortgage rates are high, and it's caused more new home construction because we're way short of housing stock. But a lot of people are not selling their homes, and they don't have any impact from high mortgage rates. Okay. Now, entertainment and goods. This is a really important distinction. What we're seeing is people have not been affected in terms of their spending habits on certain types of experiences. Restaurants would be an example. Airlines would be another example. Cruise lines would be another example. On the other hand, manufactured goods are not anywhere close to accelerating in price as these other experiential ones. Now, there's some anecdotal data with companies like dollar stores that people in the lowest income cohort are making changes in their expenditures. Also, there was a big bump in savings through government programs that occurred during the pandemic, and those are going down. So I'm not suggesting everything's hunky-dory, but I can tell you the stock market is smelling something. This is not crazy, and it's because corporate profits are good in spite of rising interest rates. And so I would say the person said inflation was 9%, as I recall last week. That's just simply not true. And where you experiencing inflation, frankly, depends a lot on the nature of your expenditures. And that's what I meant to say. That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. So the total homes sold, this is interesting, in the Austin area, Austin, I guess I say, was up 1% year over year. I would call that a flat market. The median sales price was up 1%, and the price per square foot was up 1%. Now, what you might expect in the spring has actually happened. New listings, 3,709 new listings, that's up 35% in the last month. But I'm not a real estate person, but that's my understanding of the seasonality. Because in terms of the supply of inventory, we have 4.1 months supply, and that's no change on a year-over-year basis. And the median days on the market is down 2%. That's still 82 days. So the days of multiple offers and houses selling in 3 days are over. We're now closer to 3 months in the Austin area. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. I'm going to get in the weeds here a minute because we do get financial planning questions. And I have a really, you can hear the paper rattling, so I've got this typed out. I encountered a couple who were both in their 70s, and they both had inherited IRAs. And the question was, would they be subject to the 10-year rule, meaning they have to take the money out within 10 years, or would they be subject to having it taken out over their life expectancy? And the female spouse inherited her IRA in 2018. That was pre-2019. That was under Secure Act 1.0. And she can stretch her required minimum distributions over her life expectancy. However, let's suppose that she passes away and there's money still in this beneficiary IRA. Remember, this is not an IRA that a spouse gets from another spouse upon that spouse's demise. This is coming from somebody that's a non-spouse, okay? Now, any successor to her beneficiary IRA, let's suppose it's her children, they will be subject to the 10-year rule, meaning that the successor would have 10 years from the date of this person's passing to take any required minimum distributions and drain the IRA. Now, what about the husband? Well, he inherited his beneficiary IRA in 2021, which was post the Secure Act, and he is subject to the 10-year rule. And if he were to die before the end of the 10 years, his successors to the beneficiary IRA would have to wait until the end of the 10th year of the original account owner's demise. In other words, if he were to die 7 years after he inherited the IRA, the successor would only have 3 years to take the remaining required minimum distributions and empty the IRA by those 3 years, because there's only a total of 10. So when you get an IRA, now these days it's 10 years, and that's true for a Roth IRA as well, it's my understanding. And if you pass away and you haven't completely drained it, your beneficiary has whatever's left of the 10-year period to take the money. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Give me a call, 512-836-0590. I was looking at some amazing numbers for the U.S. stock market, and it reminded me, because frequently I will have conversations with people and they will say, well, I don't know about putting money in the stock market. We've got a presidential election. We don't know who's going to be president. We have a war in Gaza. We have a war in Ukraine. In the economy, I just don't know whether to do that or not. And I just want to share with you some really interesting statistics that I came up with. Some of them are just life experiences, and some are actually, I've got hard data. So this one came from Hartford. It said, elections can create uncertainty, but sitting on the sidelines could be a costly mistake. It said that presidential election years, this is from 1928 to 2023, presidential election years, the Standard & Poor 500 index average was 11.57%. And all the other years, it was 10.01%. And that stocks had a positive return in 83% of presidential election years. And during presidential election years, stocks averaged a gain of 2.78% in the first half, but 9.34% in the second half, which you think about is pretty interesting, because that's as you approach the election, the returns have actually been better. It's time for me to take a break. As you can tell from my bloviation, we have all of our lines available and no new texts. Now would be a good time to do one of those two things at 512-836-0590. I'll be back.
You're listening to Money Talk with Carl Stewart on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM. Enjoy the podcast on newsradioklbj.com. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome back to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. Thanks for listening. We're here for another, 26 minutes? So if you've been thinking of calling or texting, now would be a good time to do that at 512-836-0590. You may also listen online at newsradioklbj.com. And this Thursday after the 6 p.m. news, we will rebroadcast today's show. And you can always download on the free app SoundCloud, 512-836-0590. Here is a text. Carl, many of the people complaining about the economy have jobs. They have received raises that at least partially make up for inflation, but they are not accounting for their raises. However, the inflation is hard on pensioners without a cost of living adjustment. Thanks for your show. Well, you're absolutely right. And probably one of the most common questions that I receive, and this will not be a surprise whatsoever, is, do I have enough money to retire? And of course, the first answer is, and you've heard me say this before likely, that we have three unknowns. Number one, we don't know how long we're going to live. And number two, we don't know what the rate of return is going to be on our investments. And number three, we don't know what the cost of living is going to be. And of course, as we go through our years, as my colleague Lindsay says, first they're the go-go years, and then they're the slow-go years, and then they're the no-go years. So the nature of your expenses can shift over time from, say, taking a big vacation to covering medical expenses. So the problem is, if you're on a fixed income, you have to look someplace else because the cost of living continues to rise. That's the normal course of events. A low, a 2% inflation is frankly wonderful when you live through it when you have a pension. It's terrible if you have your money in CDs or bonds. Can or cannot be great for stocks. But this is what's tough when it comes to retirement planning, because your expenses, they may shift in terms of their nature over time, but they don't go away. So just looking and saying, I've got Social Security or I've got a pension and that's going to be enough. Well, if you retire at 65 and live to 85 or 90 and plug in a 3% inflation rate, money, the cost doubles in 24 years. So yes, you're absolutely right. People are not taking into account that. Listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. Here's another text. Hi, Carl. My 401k is doing great. Congratulations. Do you think we are not factoring in normal price increases since COVID and corporate gouging could be a factor in the mood about the economy? Thanks, Brian. Yes. What's that called? Shrinkflation. Even the president's talked about that. Or maybe your box of cereal may be the same price, but it's several ounces smaller. I don't know about corporate gouging. And the reason I say that is, we, as you've heard me say in previous weeks and today as well, we have a good job market. And labor and costs right now, according, I'm looking at the all the data, not just a small sampling. Wages are going up faster than the rate of inflation. But nevertheless, wages are going up. And if you are running a for-profit enterprise and wages go up, that means your profits go down and you're in business not only to make a profit, but to grow a profit. And so your first, you basically got three levers. One is you increase prices. Two is you reduce headcount. That's a euphemism for firing people. Or three, you get more productive. That's kind of it. And so if you're in the cereal business, you have a certain cost of goods, if it's commodities, but also labor. And if your labor is costing you more and you live in a competitive environment, you can't just willy-nilly raise prices. So you've got to look at what's happening in the competitive world. You may decide to shrink the portion, or you may put through a price increase because the market will let you do that. I mean, a good example of that I talked earlier in the broadcast is airlines. I mean, if you get on an airplane, a commercial airplane today, the odds are it's going to be full of people, and people are making that decision. If you go, I can't speak for the rest of the country, but I can tell you that a lot of times when my wife and I want to go out for Friday or Saturday evening for dinner, if I don't get that reservation 2 weeks in advance to one of our favorite restaurants, we're not going to get it. So that restaurant, I used to have a wonderful meal that was $16. Now it's $20. That's a 25% increase. Did I stop going to eat that meal? I did not. Will some people have to do that who are on lower income or fixed income, as we talked a moment ago? The answer is absolutely yes. But until there's a significant decline in demand or a significant increase in productivity, you're going to see higher prices. Now, artificial intelligence has a lot to do with that. And you're seeing it being adopted in many, many, many industries. But in service industries, like the restaurant business, it's particularly difficult. So I really don't buy into the idea of corporate gouging. I really do buy into the idea of supply and demand in the economy. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. Here's the text. Carl, do you have any comments on the article in the Wall Street Journal about Costco selling 1 ounce bars of gold to young investors? This is from Bob. Supply and demand. I think selling young investors gold is a really dumb idea. And if you're a regular listener, you know that I am positive on gold and have gold in my portfolio. But I'm also not a young investor, and it's a small portion of my portfolio. So if you're a young investor, by definition, unless you inherited a lot of money or you come out of education with a super high-paying job, your job is to grow the money. This gets back into what we were just talking about. If you ever want to be financially independent, you're going to have to own assets that, based on history and reasonable expectations, will grow over time, real estate and stocks. I'm not talking about residential real estate, because you got to live someplace. You sell your house, you're not going to live in your car. You sell your house, you move into a retirement place, it's going to be expensive. So yes, I like real estate as an investment, but it's very hard to get diversification. Back when real estate crashed in Texas, people who had four houses in four corners of the town all had the same problem with declining prices. So stocks are a way to participate in the growth of the American economy. They're a way to participate in the ingenuity of the Americans, a way to participate in what has been one of the great economic miracles in global history. And that's what young people ought to focus on. Gold is a hedge. It's a hedge sometimes for geopolitical uncertainty. It can be a hedge sometimes for inflation. It can even be a hedge sometimes for sustained long declines in the stock market. But for a young investor, frankly, I think it's a really dumb idea. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ, 512-836-0590. Richard, you're on the air. How may I help?
Yes, Carl, what is your opinion of reverse mortgages?
I think that they are only good for someone who is in a very poor economic circumstances where they have their house, they have lots of equity in their house, and they can't afford to stay there. They're living on a fixed income, maybe Social Security. They've enjoyed depreciation because they live in a city like Austin that's happened, and they don't have any other sources of income. Those people in that situation are made to measure for a reverse mortgage. But simply taking the equity out of your house and getting a higher interest rate, I don't see any reason for it unless you have to do it. You have to do it because it's the only way you can live. So I think they're made for a very specific person who's in trouble and doesn't want to and wants to stay in their home. Then it's a great idea. For everybody else, generally speaking, I do not think it's a good idea.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for calling. You're Less listening to Money. Thank you.
Level 512-836-0590.
Stick around. I'll be back.
You're listening to Money Talk with Carl Stewart on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM. Enjoy the podcast on newsradioklbj.com. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome back to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. Thanks for listening. If you have a question, now's a good time to call or text 512-836-0590. Here's a text that just came in. Hi, Carl. I just turned 62. I am trying to decide on retirement, and do I have enough? I also worry about medical if I retire early. My wife and I have $3.1 million in IRA, 401k, and an investment account. We have saved about $60,000 for each of our sons' college. I have a great paying job and probably the easiest one I've had. I'm wondering what you would think about retirement and when. My wife and I are healthy now. I look forward to some freedom, but I'm scared of retirement. Boy, there's a lot to unpack there. I'm going to do my best. There are several things within that. First, I would go to a college retirement planning website. Mutual fund companies have them. And I would plug in the type of school that you think your sons will go to in college, whether it's a private or public. And then I would look at what the costs are. And see whether or not the $60,000 is enough, or you can say that's our portion and they can borrow the rest or however they can get the money. That's fine with me. But if you're trying to save for their you're going to give them the money for 4-year undergraduate education, there's a lot of schools where $60,000 is going to be way short of what you need. So right off the bat, think about that future liability and put some numbers to that. The other one is you have real longevity risk. I think you have to plan to live to 90. So that's 28 years. 28 years. That's a long time. And you're right about health costs because you're too young to qualify for Medicare. And so you're going to have private insurance. And if you're on your own and you're not part of a large employer plan, that's very, very expensive. So the next thing you want to look at is, what if we both didn't work and were 62, what would private health care insurance cost? Because as you get older, the odds are you're going to have more demand because you're going to get sicker as you grow older. And finally, we go back to what I said earlier about that $3.1 million. We don't know what your investment rate of return is going to be over the next 28 years. And we don't know what the rate of inflation is going to be. And so I think that you say you're scared of retirement. I'd be scared of retirement as well if I were you. I mean, to the average person walking down the street, you're an extremely wealthy couple. I mean, a lot of Americans can't make have a $400 emergency. They don't have the money for it. So $3.1 million, congratulations. That tells me that you're a saver and you're an investor and you should feel really good about that. But you have a long, long retirement runway, and I'm really concerned. Now, I'll finish with this. If you're a do-it-yourself investor, take some time to find some retirement planning software. If you use an advisor, engaged an advisor, then ask her or him to help you, because there's some really wonderful software available where you can plug in things like, we want to save $20,000 for our son's marriage or wedding, or we want to make up when we retire, we want to take a $10,000 trip to Europe or whatever. You can put in needs, and you can put in wants, and then you can put in different asset allocations to that $3.1 million. And then there will be a process, usually using something called Monte Carlo simulation, that will give you the probabilities, because it'll plug in your life expectancy using general data. And for people who are savers and have access to health care, you have to remember that there's a difference between life expectancy and longevity, because the life expectancy takes everybody into account, including people that have poor habits. They smoke, they're overweight, they don't have access to quality health care. You're in a special cohort. Your odds are you're going to live a lot longer. Great question. Your concern, your fear, if you want to say it, because you said you're scared, is completely legitimate. I'd be very skeptical. I'd want to get one of these programs to help me understand if it's practical and plausible to do it. It's a great question. Thanks for texting. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. Gary, you're on the air. How may I help?
Hi, Carl. Hi. Thank you for your bloviation again. I missed part of it, letting the dog out, but it was concerning the rollover or the IRAs.
Yes.
My wife recently died, and I found out that, you know, she had a small IRA at the bank.
Yes.
That, you know, I transferred over to account in about the 10 years.
Yes.
And
that doesn't affect Gary. I
don't
good.
Have 10 years
no.
left.
Well, Gary,
I want to make it
yes.
completely transparent to my heirs or something. So should I just cash this small thing in? I think that'd be the best thing to do.
It probably is. Because you can, because it's a spousal for everybody else. Because you're
right.
You're a regular listener, but for everybody else, Gary's wife sadly passed away. She had an IRA. Gary's the beneficiary, because when you set up an IRA, if you're married, the default, the legal default requirement is goes to your spouse. And if you have a spouse and you and she agreed that she's not the beneficiary, then she has to sign a document, affidavit, saying it's okay with me if Gary says our kids or grandkids. Now, so when your spouse passes away, you can put their IRA in your IRA, and you're subject to the normal required minimum distributions. And if you die with that IRA and you have other nieces, nephews, grandkids, your next door neighbors, your beneficiary, they have 10 years to take it out. Now, because this is a modest amount of money, and because you're, as I recall, you disclosed last week, I think you're 80 or 81 anyway, you're not a spring chicken, and this is a modest amount of money, and you have a real sizable portfolio, and you've done really well taking care of it. If I were in your shoes, if the $10,000 isn't going to throw me, you know, from 24% into 32%, which it's likely not to, I'd probably just cash it in and go on down the road if I were in your shoes, Gary.
Yeah, that's what I thought, Carl. I appreciate your help on that. Do you have time for another question?
I don't have any other calls or any other texts, so we can bloviate together. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. As far as my will and, say, beneficiaries on Vanguard and T. Rowe Price and other accounts and stuff, what has priority, the beneficiary or the will?
So what will happen is in tax-deferred accounts, IRAs and Roth IRAs, they will do that will go to whoever is on there. I've actually read about a terrible situation where John Doe and Mary Doe got a divorce, and John never changed the beneficiary on his IRA, and he married Sue, and he died, and Sue got zero, and wife number one got the IRA, because it didn't matter what he said, what he wrote in his will. Now, on non-taxable accounts, joint accounts and individual accounts, you can't, securities accounts we're talking about, there's no place to put a beneficiary on there. There's no beneficiary form for taxable accounts. And so what occurs is you can have something called TOD, transfer on death, but you can also just put in your will. If you've got a home and you have other assets, you're going to identify the people you want to get those assets, and you're going to identify what percentage of your estate is going to get that. And your taxable investment account at Vanguard or at T. Rowe Price, your executor will, when I say show up, I mean not physically, but they will call and get the information on what information Vanguard wants and what information T. Rowe Price wants, and your executor will provide them with the certified copy of death, a copy of the will, some other documents perhaps, and then the money will go exactly per your wishes. That's how it works.
Okay, well, I mean, this stuff is getting so involved.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, thank you, Carl. I appreciate your help.
Good, you bet, Gary. Good luck. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Greg, you're on the air. How may I help?
Hey, Carl. Hi. Just wanted to make a quick comment.
Sure.
I kind of disagree with inflation at 2% being good because, you know, if you stretch it out a little bit, you're literally, as Michael Saylor says, it's an ice cube that's melting, right?
Yeah.
And I do agree, you know, deflation may not be good or hyperinflation, but inflation itself, and just a quick, if they changed the way they calculated inflation, right? I think it was 1994.
Yeah, they made some things that I think really create a bad idea. They took what's called homeowner's equivalent rent, and they put it in the CPI, and and it's got a big percentage in there. And I think that's a mistake, frankly, because if you own your home, it doesn't matter what the homeowner's equivalent rent is. It's not part of your expenditures.
Right. So, I mean, there's reasons why they understate it. But basically, there's two websites that I do follow. I have for years. And there's a third one. One of my friends is a co-founder. The first one is shadowstats.com. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. And then there's the Chatwood Index.
Yeah.
Well, that's a more realistic monitoring or tracking of you know, actual consumer price inflation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because even though the official stats say it's 1%, I mean, look around, right?
Well,
oil
I think
price
that's
going back up, and the average person's hurting. I'm not hurting at all. I actually benefit.
Yeah.
But I see people around that are, you know, they can't afford the higher gas prices, utility, college tuition, whatever, right?
And it's interesting because there's also, on the other hand, the net worth of Americans over the last, since the pandemic, has just skyrocketed. I mean, skyrocketed. It's stunning, the gross wealth of the American consumer. And it's partly real estate, and it's
again,
stocks as well.
I'm sorry.
Kyle, let's move on. Thank you. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Well, we're down to our last couple of minutes, so I'll just save a couple of things here. I found this. I thought it was really interesting. You hear this paper rattling again. So on March 23rd of this year marked the fourth anniversary of the low in the stock market called the COVID low. And from that low through March 20th of this year, so that's 4 years, the Standard & Poor's 500's annualized total return has been 25.6%. Yes, you heard me correctly. Annualized return is 25.6%. Its average return has been a gain of only 176.7%. And just 35 stocks have declined since the low, while 280 stocks have doubled in value. Now, if you think about it, that the low was March the 20th. When did we really close down the economy? Starting on, interestingly, Friday the 13th of March. So a week later was the low in the stock market, in spite of the fact that we had no idea how bad things were going to get. We had no idea how bad it was going to be around the world. And what did the stock market do? It went up. I know that you're probably bored with hearing me say this, but because we live in these turbulent times, in these polarized times, do not let that determine how you invest your money. lot of fun this afternoon. I want to thank Kyle for doing his usual terrific job. I want to thank you for listening. And I invite you to join me next Saturday after the news at 4 for Money Talk.
Carl Stewart is an investment advisor representative of Carl Stewart Investment Advisor Incorporated.